too. I was trying to catch up on some of the stuff that you've done with Bob through the timeline, and I saw that I haven't got through the that take about a year, I think, to get through the exegesis of your book. But you guys did that one thing on YouTube or something, or there was a two-part interview. It wasn't even an interview; it was just like a conversation, I guess.
Not on YouTube.
Yeah, there's something on YouTube. I think it's Scott Norris. I think that's what it says in the, and it sounds like Scott Norris. It's from, I think, the 90s, and it's like you're on a, you two are sitting on a couch or something.
Oh, okay. That's Christmas Eve in L.A. and Nancy Parker's talking about Walter Boward with my cash flow co-host, James. James is in there.
Oh, James is in there?
Yeah, there's a glimpse of him. There's a lot of conversation, but you only get a quick glimpse of him.
Oh, okay. But is that at Scott Norris's house?
No, it's at Nancy Parker. That's December 2007. Walter Boward just died. I just come back from New Zealand, and Scott drove down and spent a week there in L.A. hanging out with his parents. And Scott grew up as a guitarist surfer in L.A.
Okay, cool.
And so, yeah, those are good. Those are interesting things. But the Fatic Communion thing, that's a massive project.
Yeah, I do want. Can I get that book still? Actually,
I can send you the contents. There's no more copies of the book.
Oh, really? That'd be great if you could. I mean, I've looked through Dave's copy, you know, well in the past when I don't even remember if it was when we lived together, or maybe it was afterward when he was at his other place in Spadina. But yeah, I've seen the book, but no, I'd love to get my hands on a copy to read it.
Okay, so I can send you the inventory of McLuhan LaRouche, Croker, Thompson, and me. That's the way
sure.
It's organized.
That'd be great.
Okay.
And you two, in your chats, you basically go through the entire book? Is that like...
Yeah, we do every sentence.
So it's... Oh, really? So it's very methodical?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And let's see, what's the next one? I'm just scanning. I've got about four of them down. So I've got sort of like the first four... pages that you sent me.
Okay, I think that's good for a start.
Yeah. All right, so are you ready, Scott? Anything you want to say?
I'm ready. I just wanted to mention, I don't know if it'll work its way into when you talk about Zappa tonight, but you sent out a video, lost video, interview of Zappa.
Yeah, did you watch that?
Well, I haven't seen it yet, but I watched about the first 5 minutes, and he was really showing his grievances with, especially McCarthy. Do you remember that he was talking about McCarthy?
Oh, yeah, he goes through his whole life, sort of like the phases. It's a good interview.
Yeah.
I've never seen it before.
Yeah. It shows how, he just was angry. He was so, you know, he was beside himself. I mean, McCarthy was just evil incarnate.
Well, I like the way he describes it, though. He's a little kid. He was perceptive enough to say, there's something creepy about that guy, you know. I mean,
mm-hmm.
He could see it.
Right.
He didn't understand why, but he could see the creepiness.
Yeah. And
he knew he was a smart kid.
And that's what created, I think, for him, the contrast that he needed to be able to do what he does. Is that he had this, you know, there was something that he detested, and he was willing to stand up against it or try to be an anti-environment to it.
Yeah, remember, he was a street punk. You know, he was a juvenile delinquent.
Mm, yeah, I wasn't really aware of that.
Oh, yeah, you read his book. He was a juvenile delinquent and blew up toilet, the high school or junior high toilet. You know, he was playing with chemicals. So he was a tough greaser, I don't know what you call it. He got a conscience, or he just was cool. He created the first integrated band out in the redneck Mojave Desert, and he tells the story how the white elite kids in the school tried to attack him. There was a big gang fight outside. I mean, he was definitely on the okay. So Dave Wally in the first bio of Zappa, the guy who did the first bio, he says he always saw Zappa as still pissed off at the white elite in the school. He never left high school. He was just pissed off at at his outsider relationship with the white kids, and he goes into that in this interview.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he just was, it's interesting, he's a genius mind, genius ears, put in, totally conditioned by his, what he grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, outsider, Italian, remember, they were the fascists, right? He's an Italian kid, and he's got no money and nothing, and he likes black music. I mean, that's like, it's like a glue-sniffing goofball, you know, for the white kids.
Mm.
And that's in the like early 60s, late
60s? No. He was born in December 40. That's in 1953, 54, 55,
wow.
The Korean War and the McCarthy era.
Yeah, so that's pretty ahead of the curve.
Yeah, I mean, he never graduated from high school. They kicked him out. they passed him so that he could get the hell out of the school. They were scared of him, the teachers. But what was neat, he had a few cool teachers, the music teacher and that, and they turned him on to stuff. So he was split. He had this physical greaser reality, but his mind was totally plugged in, getting synchronicity and finding serendipitous treasures and meeting the right people very early. Calls up Perez, you know, in 1955 for his birthday. It's all in that interview, the highlights. The guy ran through key points, pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just going to get, are we pretty, anything else, Scott?
But
you
nope.
Brought this.
Since you guys, you and Ben, and you compare back, you know, apples to oranges, Zappa to Joyce, did Joyce have a deep grievance like that, something that he just really rebelled or hated against or made him want to stand apart from the thing that he detested?
Yeah, his father was a successful political hack kind of guy, and something happened, and so by, I don't know, Joyce 10 or 11, and they go down the economic ladder, and then they move from house to house because his father was, maybe he was a drinker and he didn't pay his debts, and they got all screwed up, and so he was an outcast, much like Zappa. He started off upper when he was young, very young, good school and all that, but then his father screwed up, and then he became an outsider in Dublin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A rough kid.
And Wyndham Lewis was quite the bastard himself, right?
Well, he always had, he didn't go through that vengeance, social vengeance. He was a spoiled kid, I think. You know, he had a good high-class father and mother, but they divorced. So then he goes to England. He's born in 1882, same year as Joyce. So in his teens, he goes to the famous Slade High School and art school, and he stands out there. He really stands out. He's a genius drawer, or whatever, however they judged him. But I think that he was cared, like Beefheart, cared for by his mother, you know, overindulged. But at the school, he was a bit of a scrapper, or one day he was, and he got disciplined, strapped or something, four or five times. And when he heard the record was five and he tied it, he purposely went up to the principal's office and bounced the ball off the door so he could get one more strap and break the record. And so he was like a, you know, prima donna kid, maybe.
Mm.
You know, I mean, Zappa was not encouraged by anybody by what he could do. Joyce was not encouraged. He wouldn't publish his stuff when he was a teenager. He did get published eventually, Fleet is seen as, you know, is seen as a great painter in the school. You know what I mean? He got attention, I think.
Don Van Fleet?
Yeah. No, what did I say? Wyndham Lewis got attention.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but he dropped out. Well, he finished his schooling in art school, 18 or 19, then traveled, you know, was like a bohemian for 10 years in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Beefheart is similar like to Lewis. He's coddled as a young sculptor, genius kid. And he doesn't really go to college like Lewis doesn't.
Well, what's interesting to me is all these guys make the breakthrough, and yet you've also made the breakthrough, but you don't have that, you're not pushing against anything. You're not...
Yeah, I have a sheltered life.
I was going to say, what's Bob's grievance?
Well, just a minute. I got to check something. Carolyn, are you my grievance? No, I'm just joking.
Pritzy's honor, Bob.
Yeah, Pritzy's honor. So the pot is making noise? Shall I just move it off?
No,
I'll have it. Yeah, Carolyn's cooking something, so we just want to get the noise factor out of there before we start. So, you know, I have a very sheltered life in the social elite of your, for fuck's sake. I mean, I'm a bigger mutant. I'm a butler's kid, hardly has any education, but lived in a very elitist place. So the only grievance, very great youth, you know, but not your normal youth. So then the grievance was nurtured by my father in the long run. I mean, he was pissed at the intelligence network that we were working for after World War II, and you can read my little diary entries, the quotes with him, from 40s on up till 64. You'll see this whole string of quotes with him, and maybe they're not in order. They're by date order, but they don't. I don't know if they follow each other. They might have other ones in between. But you look at what he says to me. So, I come in it from the... see, though, Zappa, Joyce, and Beefheart, and Lewis, they grow up and go towards finding out the secrets. Do you know what I mean?
Say that again. They what?
They all grow up on the outside going towards the center to find out the secrets. Right? I grow up in the secrets and move my way out of them. it's the opposite.
Huh.
But I would say... for some reason, I had a sunny disposition because I didn't go through the high school. I didn't have those wounds that people get in school. You know what I mean?
You got along well with your mother?
Yeah, my parents were great. My father was really good.
I don't think I've heard you speak of your mother, but I'll save that for another time because you guys get started.
I don't talk about her much. She's pretty interesting, but she did not want to be involved in what her husband was involved in. She stayed out of it.
Mm.
As John Cage said, John Cage once said that he had a sunny disposition. That's what I have. So I don't have, I'm not a person who makes biting, witty, caustic statements like Zappa, Joyce, or Lewis. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that kind of edge.
Mm-hmm.
I might do it within the realm of ideas, sound like I'm doing that, but I don't have. I mean, you've never seen me.
See, there's this part of many of us. It's certainly in Ben Watson, the part that feels as though, you know, feeling suffering is having a sense of communion with your brothers in the world. You know, that you should be having compassion for or something. And you don't have that quality, and yet you don't feel like you're morally bankrupt, Bob.
Well, I have feeling. If I like some, I hang out. I learned all that later when I came to America. I mean, the first thing that got me going when I came in 53, 54 was R&B. I had never heard that music. For some reason, I thought that was the greatest music I ever heard. So I had the emotional. Remember, you know Don's Discs in Toronto, Scott?
Yeah.
Okay. That Don guy, I once talked to him. He used to go to a store in the early 80s. He's not around anymore, right?
No, I don't think so, no.
Yeah, so I used to talk to him occasionally, go and look get some records. And one day he, I don't know how it would come up, but he said, well, you know, us guys that like R&B, we're emotional. And so that kind of emotional, I don't know if it's his kind, but that's what I was, or I liked that feeling that R&B. I mean, you have to realize that's ridiculous music from Europe's point of view back in the 40s and 50s, right?
Right.
That's fucking sick. And yet, for some reason, I went for it. So I think it was my sunny disposition. I think that I just had a good emotional balance for some reason. I mean, I was well protected. I didn't have any grievances, any environmental problems, social problems dumped on me that pissed me off, you know, like they all did.
Yeah.
So then...
Well, you had the right amount of whatever, because, you know, there are kids, I know kids that were oppressed, felt oppressed by mom and or dad, and they developed an attitude. And then I knew kids that had too much freedom. I mean, mom and dad just weren't around to discipline them or hold them in check, and they kind of went nuts in their own way.
Your freedom
you had didn't cause you to just, you know, become an impulsive or spoiled like Lewis.
I was under strict orders, you know, for decades, you know, in the intelligence agencies. But I had a sense of humor. I had a good, sunny disposition, and once I hooked up with Carol, that'll make anybody happy. Right? You'd be a dummy if you're with Carol and pissed off or something. You know?
Right.
But I always feel that that I have a feeling for working people. I have aristocratic background, but just from the environment. And that's what Garrett was like,
I heard CBC did a tribute to Garrett when he died, and you helped to facilitate that.
I caused that.
Yeah, they did the obits, and they interviewed Sue Bone and another gal who was
and
close
Silvana,
to him.
Yeah, all the inner circle of Club 22.
Yeah, that was touching.
Heard that before?
No, I'd never heard it.
Yeah, what happened is that I wrote the obituary, and you can go see it on Five Body, November 25th, 93. I got it in Chronicle Herald, and some CBC producer saw it, and within a few days was calling, I don't know who they got, me or who they got first, maybe Giovanna, who was in, but I was back in New York, and then a few days later I went to the Empire State Building where Canada CBC studios were, and I got interviewed. She never used any of my interview, just a couple little sentences. But she focused on Giovanna. I don't know what would they've called. That's our name, Garrett's name for her. It might have been. She's the wife of a famous artist, Halifax artist Gordon Roach. And then they had the daughter of another famous Halifax artist, Tom Forstall. So she was featured a lot because she was well known, had the right name. And then Sue Bone in there. And then they had this. Did they have a recording of Garrett? No one. Oh, I guess Giovanna talked about going to the poverty zones of Halifax.
Yeah.
And how Garrett could walk in. Oh, Garrett was the most incredible person you could ever meet. That guy was amazing. He was, I'm still trying to probably catch up to him in impact. You know, I mean, the way he could operate.
Right.
All levels of Halifax Dharma Society loved him, and yet he was his main life was in New York. Marlon.
Yeah, except for the
kids. What'd you say, Scott? What'd you say, Scott Woods?
What did Garrett Dean do? Like, I've heard
nothing. He's from a rich family in Nova Scotia, born in 1907, and when he died, I went through a lot of his personal effects and saw early photographs, which I'd never seen before. He was in New York in 1927, so he's 20 years old, and he's obviously a gay kid. I don't know how blatant it was. Well, I know he was gay. But you see him, he's being a model. He's got his little photo for being a model in 1927 New York. But he was a great actor, and he hung out with Eva LaGallion, who formed the first American repertory company. I think it's Eva LaGallion, yeah. And who I saw act in 1976 in New York and went and talked to her backstage about Garrett. That was fun. But so he acted through the 30s and 40s, and somewhere, I think after the 40s, He opened an antique store right where the Hilton is on 63rd Street and 6th Avenue now. And Marlon Brando, UN people, everybody, Salvador Dali, would come to his antique store, and they'd either hang out and talk to him, but if he wanted to buy something, he wouldn't sell them anything. It was a total performance piece, his store. Yeah. And he would hold court with Marlon Brando and everybody. He was really a figure. Now, what's amazing is that I found a guy who knew him in that era. And we interviewed him. Listen to the Paris Flamand list on Dobbstown.com. You know, the Paris Flamand is probably the first guy we list, right, Scott?
Yep.
Okay.
And he was a well-known American poet. He's in the 50s, not so much now. And just by coincidence, a few years ago, I figured out, hey, this guy lived in, he's an expert on the JFK assassination stuff. So I bought something. And I said, well, this guy lived in the village in the 50s, and he had a radio show, and he knew all these people. He produced a radio show, maybe knew Garrett, so I emailed him, and he wrote back and said of all the people he'd ever think that anybody would ever mention, of the thousands of people he knew, he never thought anybody would ever mention Garrett, but he said Garrett was totally unique, and there was only two other people who might have been similar to him. And so I got in touch with him, and we eventually, Scott taped it, and we interviewed him. It's really interesting. He's the first guy that that I know that, I didn't meet Garrett till 56, 57, but I didn't know much about his New York life, because I didn't see him that often in late 50s, early 60s. I didn't really get involved with him until the late 60s. But he was a better part of my life, and so I didn't know about his, he wouldn't talk too much, he'd talk a bit about it, but you never knew. He would talk about the same stories, and I've got hours of that on tape, permutations on the same story, but I never knew anybody who could confirm what he was saying until we met Paris Flamand a couple years ago. And that's and he had a lot to say about Garrett, right, Scott?
Yep, he sure did.
So re-listen. You've heard the thing. Re-listen to Paris Flamand now that you've heard the documentary.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Garrett was incredible as a person. So he was an actor and an artist. And
he was a poet. Mostly we would characterize him as a poet, right?
Yeah,
I mean, he was always spontaneously uttering poetry. It was his nature.
He was much like Wyndham Lewis. Wyndham Lewis was like that. Could talk for hours and just blow you away how he could talk. So he did that. And but he was an actor. But he also was a performance artist in the way he lived. That's what I say in the obituary. He was the first performance artist since World War II or something. He just the things he did. He would walk around in Dartmouth with makeup on, and nobody knew what was going on. Little town, you know, weird white pasty stuff. You'll see me describe one of them one of the times I saw him do it in the diaries. Look at on Furry Lind. Have you ever heard that, Scott? Who's Forgotten Furry Lind? All the stuff on there.
Yeah.
Maybe a long time ago.
Made me familiar with it, yeah.
Yeah, because you hear Garrett, he's incredible. He does his rant on there in one of the sections. Bobby, 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 he says.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, okay.
It's really great.
Forgotten Furry Lint is on the Dobbstown website, and I recommend that you get to that, you know, earlier rather than later.
Yeah, I always thought that I had a feeling for people. I just wasn't good. I just wasn't... for the work or that, but I didn't go for mass movements too much. You know, mass movements always made everybody look stupid, act stupid.
Well, you don't fall into identification with other people's problems.
Right. I say, look, here's some solutions for you. I mean, that's the whole reason I went on CKL. I said, hey, you people, whoever you are, doesn't matter what class, you don't know this stuff. I'm going to tell it to you. It's for free. I thought people would be interested. Boy, was I mistaken. Actually, didn't matter. I had a good time. Still having a good time informing the people.
That's good.
So, why did we get on to that? Oh, yeah, just Scott was commenting on my sunny disposition. Yep. Who knows? I'm an evolved being, Scott. I am the second coming, okay? Get over it.
Okay, well, probably we should get going because I don't want to cut your interview too short.
Right, it's 5:30, so we can go for an hour and a half till midnight.
Okay.
Okay, so we...